Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
In this town, there is no off-season. The news never stops, and neither do we. It's always game day in Cleveland with Andy Baskin and Daryl Leiter.
What the hell happened with Jarvis Landry? Plus, what's it like to be inside that media scrum? And we'll take a look back at Browns mini camp for the rookies. Well, everybody, welcome to It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. We're so glad to have you on board. If you want to be a part of the show, we'll just hit us up on Twitter at GameDayCLE, at GameDayCLE. My name is Andy Baskin. His name is Daryl Ryder. Hello, Daryl. A lot of feedback over the last couple shows. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Going well. Appreciate everyone downloading the podcast, rating it, tweeting at us. So appreciate it. Keep them coming.
Sounds good. All right, let's hop right into it. Jarvis Landry, nowhere near the $20 million deal he wanted. He ends up back with the Saints. Browns fans asking, what the hell happened?
Well, he's a New Orleans Saint now. About $6 million, one-year deal. It didn't sound like when he spoke on Sunday that he was in a hurry to sign. Remember, he's coming off that knee injury that he had, but yeah, it came down to money, and it also came down to, I think, direction as far as what the Browns wanted to do at the receiver position. I never got the impression he was coming back. And actions spoke louder than words. They drafted two receivers, and once that happened, even though the conversation kept going that Jarvis could come back, it just didn't seem feasible. As it usually does, comes down to money. The Browns and Landry could never really get on the same page. And again, once he was released, I think that really closed the door because they couldn't come together on a restructure. And once it got to the point where it was, time to release him, I think that basically closed the door, even though, again, like I said, the conversation just went on for weeks and weeks and weeks, people holding out hope that Jarvis was coming back. It just wasn't reality.
The reason, though, I think people thought he was coming back was because of Deshaun Watson. Because I think when they released him in the beginning, it was over. I think most of us agree with that. I know you just said it. That he would be gone, and that's what I expect. I think the hard part about Jarvis Landry not being a part of the team is when he first got here, he felt like he was a locker room changer. He was a guy that was changing the environment. He was a good guy that wanted to win and didn't come with a lot of negative baggage and didn't seem like he was here just to take a paycheck. And I think that impressed fans as well as his teammates. How much will he be missing the locker room?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's something to be said for him to be missed in the locker room, but he certainly deserves credit for the influence that he had as a leader behind the scenes, especially in those early days. Obviously, it's contagious speech from Hard Knocks in 2018. He'll always be remembered for that. You're right. the Browns had been paycheck city in the NFL for years and years and years, where you had veterans that would come here simply to collect a paycheck. Winning was not important to them. We had seen that by the results on the field, but I think that when you look at where the Browns are now, how Andrew Berry has built this team, I think they're going to be okay. You can't keep everybody. It would have been nice for them to keep Jarvis Landry and bring him back. They invested $20 million a year, though, in Amari Cooper. And I think that that's, I think that's something people have to understand, is that they're spending comparable money at the position than what they were spending the previous 2 years. But, it comes down to money, and it comes down to giving these young kids those snaps. And it's just why there wasn't enough room for Jarvis on the roster, unfortunately.
So, Daryl, I think one of the hard parts is when we say it comes – and it makes sense. Look, he wasn't coming back, and that's the bottom line. And if he wanted $20 million, if there was $20 million carved out for Jarvis, and now all of a sudden another wide receiver has it, they pick up in free agency, right, in Amari Cooper, that $20 million's gone. It's hard to say, though – that at $6 million, the Browns couldn't have brought him back. They financially, that doesn't seem like that's too crazy, especially when you look at how much money they have under the cap. So I just, for me, Daryl, as I watch the story unfold, especially at the end of the season, and again, I'm not in the locker room every day. You are. But I do know that I didn't hear a peep from him after Odell was gone.
Right.
And to me, that, I mean, here's a guy that was out front center of almost everything when it came to, you know, he was the mayor. He's the guy you would go to get a soundbite. You would be, and then all of a sudden, nothing after Odell. Now, I'm not trying to say he wasn't happy, because I don't know. I wasn't there. But I got to tell you, that to me is a telling sign when a guy stops talking. And I don't think he wanted to be here towards the end. And that's just me saying that, because you normally don't have players shutting down like that, especially after they've been that vocal. Maybe he didn't. I mean, maybe he would want to be here, especially. Let me backtrack a little bit on that. I think when Deshaun Watson came in, and if the money was there, he would have wanted to be here. But he didn't. He seemed a little disgruntled to me. That's how I'm reading into it at the end of the season, because he didn't say a word. And that's just so 180 from what he had been his entire career with the Browns.
Yeah, and I mean, it was noticeable. I mean, one of the last times he talked was at one of his charity events, in which he said, he was asked about Odell, the Odell situation, and also the struggles of the offense. And he's like, hey, man, I'm not getting the ball either, so I don't know what to tell you. it was. I mean, Jarvis every week was available up until Odell left, and then we didn't hear from him the rest of the season. I think he did one post-game press conference the rest of the way, and that was it. And, players are supposed to be available. He kind of got away with it because we were still in the COVID protocols and things like that, so no open locker rooms or anything like that. But I don't think he wanted to say anything that was going to get him in trouble, number one. And then number two, again, we forget these guys are human beings. And
right.
him and Odell, very, very good friends. Very tight, very close. And I think that whole situation hurt him. And you know, the way – not so much how the Browns handled it, but I think that just everything that went on behind the scenes. And obviously, he had a front row seat for what really went down, and why the situation with Beckham and Baker Mayfield deteriorated as quickly as it did. And I think that, quite frankly, Jarvis was hurt by the whole situation. He was hurt the fact that his friend had to be released. It was not an ending that they thought or imagined going into it after the Browns traded for him. So I think that that's a big part of it, Andy, is you look at the human element, the human side of things. And I think he was hurt, and it's understandable. And I think another really telling sign is how hard he played in that season finale with Case Keenum at quarterback. You know, that's something that I'm always going to remember is, I mean, he played as if it was his last game as a Cleveland Brown. Not to say that he knew it was going to be his last game as a Brown, but I mean, he really, really went all out in that season finale and played a fantastic game. So, you know, there were a lot of things I think that went on behind the scenes. You know, we've heard some of those stories come out. But, yeah, I mean, Jarvis had a front row seat for all that. And it's disappointing that he isn't back, but it's not surprising in the least. And quite frankly, I'm glad he's in New Orleans Saint at this point.
Well, for him to be able to go back there, it's a one-year deal. I'm kind of surprised. You know, the reports are that it's $6 million. But I'm not surprised. I think that's the wheelhouse for what he should get paid for a year. Excuse me. Because he needs to prove it, right? He needs to have another prove it year.
Well, I don't know that he needs to prove it. He's had himself a very successful career. But just because he's coming off the injury, I don't think he needed to prove it. But I think, too, what he set his value at and what the Browns set his value at, clearly we're not aligned. Clearly. And, you know, he gets $6 million to go home to New Orleans. And, you know, he'll play with the Saints and see if he can, you know, kind of get things on track down there again. But, yeah, it's hard for me to talk about prove it for a guy who's been to the Pro Bowl multiple times.
Yeah, no, I'm not questioning his ability for what he's done in the past. I'm just saying if he wants a bigger deal or he wants a multi-year contract, he's going to have a year that's worthy of getting another. That's the prove-it part of it, to get the – it's the financial part of it to try to get back to. If he thought he was still worth $20 million, he took $14 million less.
Well, I don't think he's ever going to get $20 million. I as much as I love Jarvis Landry, I don't think that that's reality. You know, Odell Beckham Jr. is not getting $20 million anymore. I think there's a little disparity there in what the market, you know, felt he was worth and what he was hoping to get. And obviously, you know, the evidence is he ended up taking an $8 million pay cut.
Gotcha. All right, so Darrell, let's do this because Jarvis is gone. I mean, we've known it for a while, but now it's official as he joins the Saints. If you want to get in on the conversation on any of our podcasts, go to @GameDayCLE. GameDayCLE. We always appreciate you listening to the podcast. It's always Game Day in Cleveland. We're glad you're here. If you like what you're listening to, remember to subscribe to It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, the feed, and remember to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. When we come back, you're going to want to listen on this. A little bit more behind-the-scenes stuff. What is the media scrum? And by the way, sometimes you see the players or coaches get mad at the media. Well, the media gets mad at the media as well. We'll tell you more after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
It's always game day in Cleveland. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. Glad to have you on. Listening with us wherever you're going. If you're driving somewhere, you just want to hear a little bit more scoop on what's going on with the Browns, we're glad to give it to you. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you like it, and give us a couple stars if you're along the way. I'm not ashamed. We can beg for stars, can't we? Is that okay?
Yes, completely acceptable in the podcasting community.
We're groveling for stars. Not a problem.
All right, Daryl. We'll grovel for food.
So one of the things when we set out to do the podcast was to try to tell you a little bit more about, you know, what you listen to, what you hear, what you see when it comes to the team. And it's not always about the team itself. You know, there are always ancillary things that are going on. And, you know, I always find it funny how the media approaches the media. I mean, I mean, the media gets territorial. Daryl, right? I'm trying to think. My first year really covering the Browns here is when I came back. So probably like 2000, 2001 was the first year that I really was there, but I was still covering Ohio State. And we had a great reporter named Kerry Sayers that I was working with at Fox Sports Ohio at the time. And we had this phenomenal show called the Regional Sports Report. And Kerry covered the Browns, and I covered the Buckeyes, but every once in a while she needed a day off or something, so I would come up and cover the Browns. And every once in a while she would go down and cover the Buckeyes. It was great. I mean, it was just – we loved doing it. But, Daryl, sometimes – and this I'm leading up to the next story here – but sometimes reporters get a little territorial in that room, don't they?
Well, I mean, it can. You know, behind the scenes, you know, we're all competing just to get a question or two in, all at the same time, right? I mean – I sometimes feel bad for the, you know, Browns players and coaches, because you have like 30 people huddled around you and they're all shouting at you, asking you questions. And we're kind of like back to normal now, which is good. Knock on wood. Hopefully that, you know, it stays that way. We're able to be in person and gather around guys and be face to face and not have to be 25 feet away and or talk through a computer screen and, you know, please turn on your microphone. You're on mute, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We're not having to do that anymore. I never had that many issues. The only time I really have an issue is when somebody is responding to my question and somebody jumps in to cut them off to ask their question, then I get a little angry, because it's like, first of all, I'm having to scream around 30 people to get in a question, and then when I finally get in a question and get an answer coming my way, someone else has to jump in and cut off the answer so that they can get their question in. It's a little different than, you know, maybe covering another team in town where you sit there and there's like a count to 60 Mississippi before the next question gets asked. And you're sitting there like, can I ask a question? I don't want to step on anybody's toes here because I'm not here every day and they are. And it's, you know, they're beat. And you know, there is mutual respect amongst all of us. I would say like the Browns beat, you know, I don't think we have any rivalries or people that like hate each other. I get along with everybody in the room, you know. I'll hold microphones for other people, whether it's TV stations or, you know, other outlets.
Or even if it's not our own network, right?
Yeah, you know, because again, we're like all on top of each other, huddled around now. I don't have you know, any type of rivalry with anybody, but. It does get, you know, competitive when it comes to trying to get in questions, because we get anywhere from 8 to 15 minutes, depending on the player, or if it's a coach, or, you know, Andrew Berry, or, you know, whomever that we're talking to. We have a very limited time, and there are cases where that's the only time we get to talk to that person for the entire week. That is one thing that has really changed. You know, I used to talk to Joe Thomas every day. You know, when he played, you know, could talk to him on Monday and then Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And God bless Joe, because I mean, I would totally get it. If I'm Joe, I'd be like, I really don't have anything else to say, people. But he always made himself available. And you find that out with, you know, a lot of guys who will make themselves available. Quarterback, not one of them. You get the quarterback one day a week. That's usually Wednesday, and that is it. There have been years where the Browns have had a rookie quarterback, and you get him twice outside of game days. The quarterback always talks after a game, unless you're Baker Mayfield after the Lions win. Then that doesn't happen. but quarterback always talks after the game, unless, again, you're Baker or injured. And that's usually, you know, red flags will go up. Like, if the quarterback doesn't talk, that's why everyone made such a big deal of that particular circumstance, because it's so highly unusual. It like never happens in the world of the NFL. But we've had a couple instances where the Browns have had a rookie quarterback, and so the team, you know, would make him available on Monday occasionally, as well as the Wednesday thing. But yeah, that's just kind of how things play out. And then we were talking about Jarvis earlier, Andy, and his availability, and how he just did not make himself available for the rest of the season. Partially, I think, because he just didn't want to say anything that was going to upset the apple cart, if you will, and not allow his emotions to speak for him. Because again, we forget sometimes, and I'm guilty of it as well, that these are human beings. They are people. They have families, friends, feelings, and things like that. And, you know, like us, they have good days. They have bad days. It's all part of it. But, yeah, I don't have any rivalries with anyone in the media room. Get along with everybody. And like I said, we also try and kind of help each other out at times when it comes to getting what we need. Not only from a technical standpoint, which is like in my case, getting the audio that I need back to, you know, so that I can send that, you know, into the newsroom and they can, you know, play that back for, you know, people to listen to. But, we treat each other with a tremendous amount of respect.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen, like, the funny part of it, I'm not throwing these guys under the bus or not, but videographers from TV stations really get territorial during postgame.
They are aggressive, I will say that.
in a thing called a scrum, because those guys don't want to go back to the station with the back of a reporter's head and their camera. And, you know, for the most part, most of the reporters know to kneel down or just, you know, stay a little lower than you possibly would, just so that those guys can get a shot. And they're all in the back. And so, because no one wants to go back without having, you know, the video they want when it comes to television. Radio is a little bit easier because, you know, we need the audio. But I'm going to tell you a story. I'm not going to use any names. I am actually really good friends with this person right now. And early 2001, it was one of those days when I was working for Fox Ohio, and I was up to cover the team. And the story I was doing was on a player defense. I'll say it like this. A player on defense who had played for the team the Browns were about to play that week, had spent a few years there, and was now with the Browns. So back in the day, you could go in the locker room. They had their session. I'm just trying to think of what time this is at. This is probably like I can't remember what time. It was, I think it was sometime in the afternoon. We had 15 minutes to do an interview, okay? So I had one person. I blew off everybody else that day, and I wanted that one person. I was going to do a story on the one person. I stood there. There was one reporter ahead of me, and I stood there as a television reporter. You know, if someone's there, especially a beat reporter for a newspaper, you would sit and you would wait, right? Daryl, this happens all the time.
Yes.
You wait. It's a courtesy. If you know someone's doing a one-on-one feature or they're doing something like that, that's fine.
That's code. You don't walk up and interrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not cool. Okay? Unless you're in the situation I'm in. I literally needed three answers to do the story. And I was in the locker room at, let's just say, 2 o'clock. And the locker room was going to close at 2:30. I stood and waited. First, there were like three or four reporters waiting, for, talking to this player. So I stood back and I waited. And I waited. And I waited. And you know, they're about to shut down the locker room at 2:30. And now it's 2:25. And from 2:05 to 2:25, one reporter had been standing there the whole time asking questions of a player, but really was kind of yakking it up with him a little bit. And I get it. He was trying to get a feel for what was going on. And I, you know, you don't get a lot of one-on-one time. So all of a sudden, he's now in this conversation with this person for 20-plus minutes. And all I need is three questions, and they're going to close the locker room on me. Like, you hear him walking around going, locker room closes in 3 minutes. This one reporter had spent 20-plus minutes with a guy. So finally, there was nothing else I could do. I wanted to get my story done. So I dropped my mic in on his conversation with him at the end with 3 minutes. Is this? Do you feel steam right now as a daily
yeah.
guy?
Yep.
Are you mad at me for doing that?
Oh, no. I'm Team Baskin on this one.
So I drop my mic in on the player. I get the craziest look from the reporter, and he finishes his question, and I'm like, I'm waiting for him to finish, and I'm hoping that he realizes we only have 3 more minutes, and that I've got it, and he's been with him for 20-plus minutes. He looks at me and turns to the player, and he says, oh, well, I guess I'm done now. Obviously, this microphone holder has some questions for you. And,
wow.
Daryl, if you want to explain to everybody else, microphone holder is probably the lowest thing you can call. It's not
complimentary.
It's when a TV – radio. I don't know that I've ever seen a radio station do it. It's when a TV station sends an intern out to hold the microphone to get sound so that – radio and newspaper and everybody else can ask questions for them so they can use their work, essentially.
Right.
And I looked at him, and I looked at the reporter, who I really didn't know at the time. I looked at him, and I said, bro, you've spent 20-plus minutes with him. I have 3 questions. I go, I gave you all kinds of respect. I go, if you have an earth-shattering question you need to ask him, go ahead. I'll drop my mic out. He looked at me, and he ran away. And I was just like, and the player started laughing. He was dying laughing.
I think I know who this reporter could be. And okay. This story is the least surprising thing ever.
So he looks at me and he's like, this microphone holder has some questions for you. And I had steam coming out of my ear. So luckily, I asked my 3 questions. I'm able to turn my story that night. Okay.
Right.
But the next part of it is unbelievable because I'm telling you, this is like something that happens at school. So now I'm steaming, and, you know, I knew Dan Coughlin for a long time. Again, I can understand why he thought I was something that I wasn't, because he probably hadn't seen me that often. I had only been at Browns camp in that capacity maybe a handful of times because normally I was covering Ohio State. So, I walk up to Dan Coughlin, you know, just friend of the family for forever, was friends with my step-grandfather when he first got into the business. And I walk up to Danny, and I say, Danny, I'm going to kill that guy. I go, who does he think he is? What is wrong with that guy? And so then I waited. And so now we go into – I'm trying to remember who that coach was at the time even. So he
– Well, if it's 2001, it's Butch Davis.
Yeah, it had to have been Butch.
Well, yeah, Chris Palmer was only here for 2 years, so.
Right. I don't know. For some reason, maybe that doesn't correlate with Ohio Sports Report. I'm just trying to – it was either Butch or it was Chris. Doesn't really matter. So they had their press conference, and I waited for that guy after the press conference. And I walked up to him, and I go, hey, let me introduce myself. My name is Andy Baskin. I work for Fox Ohio. I'm not sure who you are. I go – but what you did in there was the most classless thing I've ever seen anyone do in front of a player. I go, not only did you spend 20 minutes doing a one-on-one, I go, but I needed 3 questions, and then you had to call me a microphone holder when all I was doing is doing my job, and I gave you a lot of room. And he looked back at me and he was just, I think he was terrified because someone had called him out on it, right? I go, do you got a problem? And he goes, well, people in your industry just send interns over. I didn't realize you were a real reporter. And I'm like, does it really matter? I go, that was super rude. And he was like, I'll know you next time. And he walked away. He was shook up. And it was just one of those moments. And you're just like, I can't believe this just happened. Because I got to tell you, if he would have barked back at me, it would have been like, it would have been go time. I would have dropped the gloves right there and never did another story.
I
would have been a legend.
Look, it has happened where we have seen things get a little testy, shall we say, in media scrums.
Yeah.
And I would say about 90%. Now, again, I've got great relationships with a lot of the cameramen. And they're usually regulars. Once in a while.
I worked with a couple guys that were ready to fight every post game.
Yeah.
Every post game. They were ready to throw.
It would get testy at times. And again, I always try and treat everyone with respect. Someone needs a microphone held because they can't get as close as me or whatever. Or I'll turn sideways so I'm not in their shot and stuff like that. I always try to be cognizant in those scrums. We're all there to do a job. We're all there to do the same thing. That's just the way I always approach the job. But no, there have been times where, it's come close to blows, and that's not an exaggeration. That is, it has happened. Post game, it's happened after practices. It can get a little heated at times because, like you were explaining, some guys are just there to get one quick thing and they want to get out of there. They just want to get their stuff done and go. But I have a pretty good idea who you're talking about. And this story is like the least surprising thing ever. And I probably, I would say I have a few of my own stories involving, I would bet, the same person. I think I know who you're talking about, but that is pretty funny. But yeah, there's a lot of amongst the Browns media contingent, as I was saying earlier, we all get along, we all treat each other with respect. And the other thing too is it's not as territorial as it used to be. Again, the code is if somebody is speaking to a player one-on-one, you do not walk up to them. You let them have their space and do their thing. But in your case, where it's going on for 20 minutes and you need to get your job done too and the locker room's about to close, I'm totally team Baskin on that one.
I'll tease this for a future podcast, but and this is a baseball story, actually. I once saw two giants in the baseball writing field in Cleveland almost go toe-to-toe in a heavyweight bout in the press box. I'll tell that story some other day. It was unbelievable.
I have a dear friend and mentor that no longer works in the market, but almost threw down, in the elevator with a member of the opposing media, and I had to play peacekeeper. Let me tell
wow.
you that. This shouting and screaming at each other lasted from the service level to the press box. It was one of the most epic events of my young career.
There's a book to be written on media fights. I think people would be so surprised. All right, if you enjoy what you're listening to, why don't you remember to subscribe to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland feed. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Rookie minicamp was over the weekend. You tell us, or we'll tell you a little bit more about what we learned about the rookies over the weekend.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
It's always game day in Cleveland. Glad you're listening to us. And make sure you subscribe to the feed because we love having you on board. And it's always game day in Cleveland feed. So simple to get to. Remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to be a part of the show, you can always find us at Game Day CLE. He's Darryl Ryder. I'm Andy Baskin. Rookie minicamp. First chance to see guys like David Bell, Jerome Ford. I mean, it was an interesting first weekend for the rookies. Perry and Winfrey also not afraid to talk. And then a couple of names popping out, especially a quarterback that ended up getting signed. What was your big takeaway from a rookie minicamp?
Well, my biggest takeaway was the one guy that I wanted to see, I didn't get to see, and that was Cade York. I wanted to see him kick some field goals. Fun story. They put in a new heating and drainage system, and with that comes brand new fields on top of it out in Berea. So there wasn't anywhere for him to kick footballs because all the uprights were down. They had to take all the goalposts down to put in the new fields. And then obviously, you know, the fields are still coming in. So Cade went down to First Energy Stadium to get his work in and to kick. And he also, leading up to rookie minicamp, visited with Phil Dawson for about 40 minutes on the phone to kind of get the 411 on just, you know, what it's like to kick in Cleveland, kick at First Energy Stadium, what to look for, you know, what made Phil so successful in his time here and whatnot. So, the one guy that I really wanted to see, and I was planning on sending out video of every single kick because I think nothing gets Browns fans more excited on Twitter than either Deshaun Watson blocking me or me posting kicker video. Kicker video, always a hit on Twitter. So I was unable. We were talking about, you know, you go in wanting to get something done. You just want to get I actually left rookie minicamp feeling like I didn't accomplish what I set out to accomplish. And that was just to post an obnoxious amount of Cade York kicking video. So maybe OTAs. Or the veteran minicamp in June, I hope to have a ridiculous amount of Cade York video content for you on Twitter.
Darryl, does that make you like need to go home and drink a beer? Does that make you really feel like you failed as a human being by not being able to get kicker video?
Well, I don't want to go as far as being a failure as a human being. That's a little harsh coming from you, Andy. But, yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure you're okay.
No,
because
yeah, you know, an alcoholic beverage may have been consumed Friday night in the comfort of my own home. I think that is, you know, fair to say. And I kind of felt like my audience was let down. You know what I mean? Like, they expect that of me, and I was unable to deliver. But in all seriousness, you know, you can't read a lot into rookie minicamp, and I wrote about this a little bit on Friday, just because rookie minicamp is a little different under Kevin Stefanski than I'm used to. First of all, there are only 27 guys there, okay? That's number one, all right? you had 9 draft picks, 13 undrafted free agents, 3 tryout players, and then 2 members of the active roster were participating. So it wasn't like there was 50 guys at this thing where you could have offense and go against defense and things like that. So that's a little different. I liken it to watching a football camp, which I get, well, it's called a mini camp, right? So, well, it looked like a mini camp in that respect, right? A lot of one-on-one time, position coaches with players, a lot of teaching going on. And again, I've seen that over the years with coaching staffs, but I would say the last 2 years with Kevin Stefanski, his staff very super hands-on with these young players, which is kind of cool to see, to watch these coaches legitimately teach the young kids, these rookies, you know, intricacies of the game. So that's kind of fun to watch. But other than that, there's not a lot of insight, not a lot of analysis, not a lot of breakdown you can have when it's that type of practice. I'll say David Bell, quality first impression. I remember a year ago, you know, Anthony Schwartz got off to a little bit of a rough start. A couple of footballs hit the ground in practice, which caught our attention a little bit, considering he's a draft pick. David Bell, hands like glue, caught everything thrown to him. So it was good to see that. But yeah, just not a lot to break down or take away or feel like that. A certain player stood out just because, again, the environment was more about teaching rather than competition between, skill positions.
There are a couple of little storylines out of minicamp. I know I had my eye on because he's a Heights guy and because I've known the family forever. But Malik Smith, brother of Tyreek Smith, who got drafted by Seattle, who was who started at Ohio State as a defensive end. And he had his tryout, but he never played football before. He's a basketball player. He was at UNC Asheville. And his brother kept telling him, Tyreek would tell Malik, hey, you should play football, you should play football. Well, he didn't. And then he went to Ohio State's workout, and then the Browns asked him to come to rookie minicamp. Terry Pluto had a follow-up on him in the paper the other day just saying, in his headline, it was pretty funny. It was like, how do you wear a helmet? Because Malik hadn't wore a helmet since fifth grade.
Right.
So they asked him about, what size pads do you wear? And he has, no idea. I do think this is a great story if one day, 3 years from now, this guy's playing in the NFL somewhere because someone wants to take a chance on him, or he ends up in another league and learns how to play the game a little bit more, or just tries to find something else. But, I mean, he's 6'4", 267. He's just hoping for anything he can. I just think that story to me is just kind of fun, and it's on a personal level. But the other story I thought was Felix Harper, the quarterback out of Alcorn State, that they brought in as an invitee, and now he's got a chance. They signed him after this weekend to let him go, and they were saying that his arm is phenomenal. And when you take Baker Mayfield out of the mix, I mean, if Harper's here and Dobbs is here, by the way, you need 5 quarterbacks for camp, don't you? 4 or 5 quarterbacs for camp, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, they also had Jake Fromm over the weekend.
Oh, that's right.
They needed people to throw footballs, so he's destined to potentially be a practice squad guy. But
well, that's pretty good because he didn't have a job 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, no. I'm not trying to downplay it, but I mean, let's just kind of be realistic. Let's not get all excited that they, found the next Tom Brady here. Deshaun Watson's the number one. Jacoby Brissett's number 2. Josh Dobbs is number 3. Harper is now number 4, and Baker Mayfield's number 5. So that's the depth chart at the position. It was interesting. There's another basketball player turned tight end that's here too, Marcus Santos Silva. And he's another guy that hasn't played football in a long time. Played college basketball at Texas Tech, is making the conversion. Another big dude, hard to miss as well, 6'6", over 260. You know, Kevin Stefanski talked about why they like those type of guys and how, you know, the basketball rim protection and you know, going after basketballs really applies and translates on the football field and whatnot, and what they look for as far as guys that have that potential to convert. It's not something that's foreign. It is unique. Let's, you know, not downplay that aspect of it, but we have seen it, you know, happen regularly where you have basketball players convert to football. So he's another guy that when we get to training camp that I think Browns fans are going to want to really pay attention to. The Colts were looking at him. The Ravens were going to look at him. He ended up signing with the Browns because, well, they offered him a contract after his tryout, and he didn't want to risk going to these other tryouts and going through these mini camps or whatever and not getting any offers. So Marcus Santos Silva, keep an eye on him in training camp too.
And then they also have Zaire Mitchell-Payton also on the – I mean, they still – I mean, I'm just looking at our lads. They still have seven tight ends listed. I wonder how much Kevin's going to – I wonder what the tight end impact will be next year. And I wonder if Kevin rethinks what he has. Although I still think and maybe we'll leave everybody with this on this thought, that David Njoku is probably your second most confident receiver – outside of a running back, right, going into next season right now? I mean, if you had to throw the ball to a guy that was on the field, Amari Cooper would be your number one target. And then I just feel like the wide receiving core is just a mishmash. You know, it's Donovan Peoples-Jones, it's Anthony Schwartz. It's, you know, I don't know if you're talking about a confidence level. And maybe let me circle back to the beginning of what we were talking about. Do you think they need to go out and get a free agent wide receiver? I do, but I don't think they're going to.
Well, that's the thing. Do I think they need to? Sure. Are they going to? No. They've got you got Cooper, four draft picks plus Jakeem Grant. Quick math, I believe that adds up to six, and that's usually how many receivers they keep at the position. And then let's not forget the Swiss Army knife there. Is he a running back? Is he a receiver? Dimitri Felton, their sixth round pick from a year ago. So yeah, I mean they're set at the position. Now it's going to be a matter of them, you know, figuring out, you know, who can do what, who fits into what role. Obviously, outside of Amari Cooper, I really feel like that they have told us how they feel about Anthony Schwartz and Donovan Peoples-Jones. I think we are more concerned about that position group, Andy, than the Browns are. I honestly believe that, because I think if Andrew Berry felt like they absolutely had to have a veteran to add to this group, he'd go out and do it, but he's not doing that. So I understand the conversation, but I'm just also trying to keep it real for people. Like, they're telling you how they feel about their receiver group. You know, Amari's the number one. They drafted David Bell in the third round. He, I think, by the end of the season, could ultimately end up being the number two receiver. They love right. Anthony Schwartz. They love DPJ. Michael Woods is going to get a crack at this thing. Maybe Jakeem Grant, who's primarily a returner, but maybe he gets a look on offense as well a little bit. Obviously, they don't want to wear him out, but no. Maybe he gets a little bit. So the numbers just don't add up for them to be bringing in another veteran. And again, going back to the Jarvis Landry conversation that we had earlier in this podcast, like the writing was on the wall. So sometimes you just have to believe what they're trying to tell you. And so when it comes to the receiver position, I think they feel a lot better about it than we do. And obviously, Andrew Berry been doing this a little longer than we have. You know, Kevin Stefanski has the job for a reason. So just, I think sometimes you just have to trust in their evaluation. Now, if we go through the season and they aren't getting the production that they need at at that position, then guess what we're going to be talking about all through the season and all through next offseason? They should have gone out and brought in another veteran. But right now, with the investment in draft picks that they have, four guys in 3 years – plus Amari Cooper, plus Jakeem Grant, plus Demetric Felton. Andrew Berry's sitting there thinking, I'm good. We've got the guys. This is who we're going to go with. Let's give these young kids an opportunity to make an impact. And we got one guy that we're paying him a ton of money. Keep in mind, they're paying Amari Cooper $6 million more than they paid Odell Beckham Jr. or that they paid Jarvis Landry, because Jarvis and Odell were in that $14 million and change range from a salary standpoint. So between them, that's $28 million. That's a lot of money for two players. So now they're paying Amari the $20 million, okay? And you've got DPJ, Schwartzy, David Bell, Michael Woods on these rookie-level contracts as third, sixth-round picks that are very, very team-friendly. So, yeah, sometimes you just have to believe the Browns when they're trying to tell you something. And in the case of the receivers, Andrew Berry's been telling us for weeks now, we're good.
I hear you. And I think you're right. And it's just we sit here and talk about it for 4 hours a day, how we think they're going to – or what wide receiver we'd like to see them bring in. I just don't see it happen. Daryl, as always, it's been a blast. Let folks know, we normally drop on Mondays and Thursdays, but if something happens, you know we'll do an instant podcast right away, especially when there's major breaking news. We will have one there for you. And, you know, sometimes things change, like last week with the schedule game, you know, we pushed over to Friday. So hang tight, and the easiest way to stay on board is to let the podcast come to you. And how do you do that? You just subscribe to It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. For Daryl Ryder, Meredith Kane, our awesome producer, I'm Andy Baskin. Again, remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. It's Always Game Day in Cleveland.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.